Welcome to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Take your first step into a larger world by checking out the network on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on Facebook, iTunes, and Twitter. Hey everybody, welcome back to Journals of the Willing, our twice monthly look at Star Wars on the printed page. This week we are going to be taking a look at the Vader Down arc from Marvel Comics, and helping me to do that, you know him, you love him, it's Steve. How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. How are you?
You know, winter's done, spring's right here, and celebration's coming up. You know, have you ever take a minute to think about how bloody lucky we are as Star Wars fans these days?
It's Christmas every day.
Well, you know, that's not far from the truth, though. I was thinking about it today, you know, with celebration on my mind, even though I'm not going. You know, I was just thinking, like, we've got, you know, Rogue One is coming home on DVD in a couple days, and the Han Solo movie is in full production, The Last Jedi is in post-production, Battlefront is coming back to video games this later this fall. We've got comics virtually every week, novels coming more than you and I can handle. Rebels just wrapped up, but we're going to get more animated stuff. Toys are a constant. It's like being a Star Wars fan is not a whole lot different than drinking from a fire hose.
Everywhere you turn, there's something.
It's a hell of a time to be alive if you're a Star Wars fan, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, they filled up every medium imaginable, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what's left. I mean, VR is going to be an offshoot of video games. That's going to come. It's going to saturate TV at some point. That's a given. I don't know what's left for them to monopolize it for us.
I'm trying to think of something ridiculous, but you know what? There's probably, I'm like, bathroom products, living room products. I'm like, no matter what you think of, there's a Star Wars thing for it.
Yeah, there's already, I'm sure, Star Wars toothpaste and Star Wars this and that, everything.
I was very close to buying a Darth Vader toothbrush. I had to stop myself. I was like, if I have guests over, they might look at me differently, but... Maybe.
My grocery store this time last year, our grocery store had bags of oranges with Star Wars tags on them. I'm not even joking.
I mean, they kind of resemble BB-8, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. You're right, but this was just like a generic, like, Darth Vader tag. It was so strange. Like, why would they do this? Anyway, we're here to talk about Vader Down, since we never got around to finishing Empire's End. I don't know if we'll ever finish that book.
We'll get there.
It is good, though. We'll get there. Yeah, so Vader Down. This is a six-part arc that kicked off, starting with the Vader Down one-shot. And, you know, everything before that point was leading to this huge crossover. Before we get into it, how do you feel about big crossovers?
I think it works in the context of the Star Wars comics because there are so few ongoing. I typically have a bit of anxiety when it comes to certain crossovers. I think when you look at Marvel and DC, those universes are so expansive as far as the comic, the catalog goes. But with Star Wars, I feel like it works more so because I didn't feel overwhelmed with the amount of issues that were, you know, crossing over. And the characters just normally interact to begin with. But typically, I think crossovers can be overwhelming. Depending on the, you know...
I am totally on the same page with you. They give me total anxiety. I just beyond feeling like a huge money grab, you know, I get from a creative perspective that it just opens everything up and you can let the story breathe so much more. But from a fan standpoint, it's like, ah, come on, man. I wasn't planning on buying all these series. I don't want to be picking up X this and X that and, you know, 8 different X titles a month when I only really need to read 2 or 3.
Right, exactly. Like when Marvel does like their Infinity story and all these stories, it's like, I don't even know. When by the time the whole arc is done, it's like 50 issues of everything. And it's like all these series that you had no idea even existed are somehow affected by this overarching thing. And you got, it's, yeah, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting a little bit of trepidation because there's been a lot of news at Marvel surrounding the X-Men comics. And they're revamping really the whole line of X comics. There's, I mean, Old Man Logan will stay as is, but there's going to be X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold, The Astonishing X-Men, and on and on. And there'll be some character-focused titles. But I decided that, you know, I always want to have X titles to read and follow the X-Men. I love the X-Men growing up. But it was always too much. The continuity was always so wishy-washy. And you would always have to be picking up so many other titles to follow them. Now, this time, Marvel is once again promising, you know, a tight-knit web of storytelling. So, okay, Marvel, I'll trust you one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've added X-Men Blue and Gold, as well as the Old Man Logan, to my pull list, and we'll see how that goes.
When does that start, the new X titles?
April 12th, something like that.
So soon.
They're coming soon.
Soon.
Yeah, so yeah. March 29th, just earlier this week, saw the drop of X-Men Prime, I want to say it's called. And it's a one-shot to sort of kick off this new era of storytelling for the X-Men. And for the love of God, it better be something they stick with. Anyway, all that to say is, you know, I agree with you. Within Star Wars, because, like you said, there's so few ongoing, that if they do overlap, you know, Star Wars and Darth Vader, okay, I don't have to stretch that far. I was buying those two titles anyway.
Exactly. Same.
But yeah, if they have, you know, 6 different ongoings and they all have to mesh up, not cool.
Right. I mean, the only thing extra that you had to buy was Vader Down, the opening issue, the first one.
Correct.
Because that was the only thing outside. But other than that, I mean, I'm looking, I pulled out the issues just for the conversation so I could, like, you know, if I had to reference them. That one was an extra couple of dollars or a dollar. That was $4.99 for that one.
Yeah, Marvel always does that with their one-shots.
Yeah, but I think it was extra length. The book just feels thicker, I think, than the typical issue.
So I think it's a 32-pager as opposed to a 22, so
yeah,
whatever. It's not like they're just charging you more because they can.
Right, there's extra content there.
Yeah, so I mean, speaking of Vader Down, the one-shot, it does kick off the series, and in a nutshell, for those who have not ever read this and don't intend to, this series puts Vader in the position of being the prey as opposed to being the hunter. I mean, that's really at the core of this story, and there's some stuff going on around it. But really, it's the first time we see Darth Vader in a vulnerable position. Now, he may not see it as vulnerable because, as we'll talk about, he just doesn't seem to mind being in impossible odds. But it for us as a reader, it sees Darth Vader in this really bad spot. So the arc starts with Vader on his way to a planet or a moon called Rogus Vas, and it's the site of an ancient Jedi temple. And he's been given information that not only is the rebellion there, but Luke is there. He's now obsessed. His quest to find Skywalker is on. And right off the hop, we get this wonderful splash page of Vader's advanced TIE fighter emerging from hyperspace. And he comes face to face with what looks like, I think they called it 3 squadrons of X-Wings. So there's 30 plus X-Wings. And, you know, I didn't know the Rebellion had that many X-Wings total. But here we go. That was one hell of a way to kick off this story. What did you think of that opening splash?
I just opened to it right now just so I can kind of get a fresh reaction. And it is gorgeous. The artwork. The art is Diodato?
Yeah, Mike Diodato,
Diodato.
on pencils.
It's, well, one, I guess, yeah, we didn't realize how impressive that the Rebel fleet was at this point. But, I mean, prior to this arc, we didn't really hear of Vorgas Voss, right? This is the first time we're hearing of it?
It's the first time I hear of it.
Right. So, clearly the Rebel Alliance at this point has had, you know, their hands in different areas of the galaxy. Because they're, you know, they're not quite at Hoth yet. So it's kind of, I guess, an in-between base. But yeah, you kind of get that sense that, you know, between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, you know, the Rebels have been bolstering their defenses.
Yeah, like, so one of the things throughout this issue, actually through the entire arc, is that we see all these X-Wings and we see Y-Wings and tons, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 Rebel troops. And they're all stationed on this moon, which was just a refueling depot for the Rebellion. And I kept thinking to myself, I didn't think the Rebellion was this big. And why did they have such an expansive force on this out-of-the-way planet? It doesn't make sense to me. And I'm trying to find ways to rationalize it. And the only thing I can come up with is that, I guess as a comic book writer, you're kind of you're absolutely confined to what exists in novels and especially the movies. But if you stick to that so strictly, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to write really boring books. So I guess the Rebellion can be as big as they need it to be without infringing on actual continuity. So as much as I want to nitpick it, I do have to give the creatives on these books a bit of latitude to be able to tell exciting stories.
Right, and just from a story standpoint for Vader, you know, he has to have some establishment of stakes. And, you know, just to see how much he is going up against. Because, like, you put it perfectly, you know, it puts Vader in the position of prey rather than predator. And, you know, this is really kind of, you know, for anyone other than Vader, this is an overwhelming situation.
Yeah, and you know, the writer Jason Aaron does a good job of doing that. Like I said, he's put Vader in front of 30 X-Wings, and he goes and takes down almost every single one of them through a few pages of great art. And lo and behold, isn't Luke one of these X-Wing pilots? And of course, he's one of the last ones left. And once he's figured out that Vader is the pilot, well, Luke decides that he's going to crash his X-Wing kamikaze style right into Vader's advanced TIE fighter. So that's what he does. They smash into each other in space. Somehow, they both don't explode. If, you know, if it was anybody else, that guy would have been dead.
Exactly.
But because it's Luke, the X-Wing doesn't explode into a million pieces. Instead, they both crash down to the planet's surface. And word spreads that, you know, Vader is down on Vorgas Voss. And General Dodona, there's that name again, he sends more help. Han Solo goes with Chewbacca, and they're going mostly to help Luke. But the entirety of the Rebellion is seemingly mobilized to apprehend Darth Vader on Vorgas Voss. And really, that is, in a nutshell, the entire first issue is just to show us how powerful Vader is and to put him into a whole lot of trouble. And that was our $5 worth out of that book. Oh, actually, no, I forgot to mention. So, Vader does get some help in the form of Dr. Aphra, 000, and BT in this arc. So they also take off to go help Vader on Vorgas Voss. And these comics always have to tie a little bit to the grander universe, and now with Rogue One out and seeing, and it's, I guess it's Rebels as well, seeing all these different locations of Jedi temples, and here we have Luke standing amidst the ruins of a Jedi temple on this planet, it ties nicely into what we're getting in the Star Wars universe now. Was that something that stood out to you?
Absolutely. I mean, thinking about where Luke is today in the current saga, you know, it seems like it's going to be all about that temple and what Luke has been doing. And you know, so they're definitely, you know, planting the seeds for these temples being pivotal to the overall story of Star Wars. So it's nice to kind of see these threads starting to connect, you know, the comics and the movies, the spinoffs and the sagas. And of course, Rebels, you know, the temples played a huge part in those. So it kind of, you know, gives you hints as to what the focus is going to be moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that's going to not only play into Rebels and the current trilogy. I think this is going to lay groundwork for stuff that's still to come that we have never explored before. And this is just the beginning of that.
Right. I mean, I feel like every day, you know, I'm calling for, Knights of the Old Republic and far past events. So I think, you know, I think fans are definitely itching for the history of these temples and going back.
Yeah. Yeah, it would not shock me to see this temple on Vrogas Voss in a video game in all its glory, or even a new animated series set in the past, or going right to the top, dreaming big, in a movie set way in the past, in the Old Republic era, before the fall of the Jedi, before all these temples fell. It wouldn't shock me at all to see us revisit that temple on Vrogas Voss, completely restored and occupied by actual Jedi. So anyway, to finish up with the one shot, it ends with Vader on the planet's surface. He's separated from Luke, and he's completely on his own. No help, no TIE fighter, it's trashed, and he is surrounded by what looks like a couple hundred rebel soldiers, tanks, you name it. The rebels have got him dead to rights, but we know how this ends. And you get that famous line to end the book. It says, the rebellion captain out on the field says, you're surrounded. And he says, Vader says, all I am is surrounded by fear and dead men, as he ignites his lightsaber. And that's how the issue ends. And you just know what's coming next.
Oh, I love that last shot, because it's like a splash page, and then you can kind of just get that close-up of him when he delivers that line. Fantastic. It really is.
Yeah, and such a tease, too, in more ways than one, because it was sort of like, well, now you got to wait a month before you get to see Vader doing what you know he's going to do. And also, this for me, this was always a prelude to what I was hoping to see of Vader in Rogue One. We didn't quite get that, but we got a pretty good taste.
Right. We didn't get it on this scale, but we got, yeah, kind of a more toned down horror-esque version of it.
Yeah. I mean, and this, something you can do in comics is just really push the envelope as far as force powers go and not worry too much about, you know, jumping the shark, so to speak. So, of course, issue number 2 in the arc drops. We're talking about Darth Vader number 13 now. And it just starts with Vader laying waste to these hapless rebel troops. It's really quite something. I mean, he's setting off the grenades that these rebel troops are wearing. He's detonating those. He kills them that way. He uses the Force in such innovative ways. It's quite spectacular. I mean, there's no other real way to put it. It's Vader at the height of his power.
Just on a art side, I just want to note like the amazing use of like color in like the couple of pages at the beginning when he's laying waste to the rebels. You know, the tones of the red and the orange. It's so Vader. Because you have him in just all black, and then, you know, as the explosions are going off, and he's, you know, firing back the shots that they're sending his way, and it's just, tonally, it's amazing.
Yeah, and you can tell that, you know, this place is sort of a dust bowl of a planet. Another Star Wars dust bowl, go figure. But you can imagine, it's kicking up all this dirt, it's sundown at this scene, and it's just, everything is just washed in reds and oranges. It's super gorgeous. I love the work that they did here. And you're right. It's just tonally, it's perfect. It's Vader on Mustafar colors.
Mm-hmm.
Then we flip back to the Rebellion, who are mobilizing to help. For Han and Luke, or for Han and Chewie, this is, we got to save Luke. And for Leia and everybody else, it's, we have to either kill or apprehend Vader. Which predictably is not going to go very well. But there's a little subplot that runs in this whole storyline about Dr. Aphra versus Han Solo. And it's the first time that I've really figured, like, Dr. Aphra really is sort of an inverse of Han Solo.
Yeah, I mean, totally went the opposite direction from him. Absolutely.
They're both kind of morally ambiguous. They both share a very similar sense of wry humor.
Mm-hmm.
They both serve no one, yet kind of tag along anyway. And this is where I really came to enjoy the Dr. Aphra character. I didn't care for her a whole lot until this arc. Yeah, and she was. It's the sense of humor that she plays off the droids and she plays off of Han that really sold me on this character in this arc.
She really had this is really, yeah, when she starts to shine, because following this arc was when she crossed over to the Star Wars comics for a little while.
Yeah.
Right, it was right after that, yeah.
So Aphra calls in some extra help. She realizes that herself with the two droids may not be enough to deal with everything that's going to be in her path. So she calls in a friend, which they kind of... They don't make it clear who it is, but you know that it's Black Chrysanthemum, the gigantic, dark-haired Wookiee bounty hunter. And so he's en route to give her a hand. And the issue ends with Triple Zero, who is her Black Protocol droid, murderous Protocol droid friend. He stuns Luke. Actually, it was because Aphra had painted him gold, right?
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't travel with gold space spray paint? I thought that was sort of one of the sillier notions in this book that, oh yeah, wait, let me just go on my ship and get my gold spray paint.
Yeah, it's as common as duct tape, right?
And one interesting bit from this book is when Luke is sort of rummaging through the wreckage of that Jedi temple. He feels Ben Kenobi, and what he thinks is his father, Anakin. Which I thought was really interesting, because whether Kenobi was there and he could feel Luke could feel Kenobi's presence, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
For him to feel quote unquote Anakin, maybe he was fooling himself and believing that what he feels is actually Vader, or maybe he's actually feeling Anakin within Vader. Like, he knew all along that Anakin was still there.
Right. What struck me is I thought maybe it had to do something with the temple itself. That maybe, whatever special properties of the temple, maybe the Force is strong in that location. He's able to break through whatever barriers that Anakin and, Vader had put up. So there's a lot of possibility, a lot of ways to interpret, why he thought he felt Anakin at that time.
Yeah, but I thought that was a really interesting little tidbit there. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, we can't forget this is really, really shortly after A New Hope. And so to see Luke progressing this quickly, it's something that I've been kind of unsure of as far as these comic books go. And this is the second confrontation between Luke and Vader in the Star Wars series, and I get why you have to do that. You've got to put the main protagonist and main antagonist together once in a while, otherwise what's the point? But I feel like every time they do this, it sort of takes a little bit more away from Luke and Vader in Empire Strikes Back.
I could definitely see where you're coming from. I'm trying to think of, like, on the flip side of, like, ways to make, kind of reconcile it. It's that, you know, I think the reason why it feels so off, maybe there's been, because there's been so many years since that, you know, we've had time to see episodes 4, 5, and 6 as one cohesive flowing story. Whereas in, they seem to be taking the approach that the story is actually much bigger. We just weren't told these parts yet. So it's weird to get used to. And I think we'll probably need some time to, like I said, like reconcile that and kind of think of Star Wars in a from a different angle, being one full cohesive story with all of these other pieces now in it. It does change the story and the impact, but I'm wondering if it's something that we just need time with. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say, because let's say you're talking to somebody who has never watched or never read these comics, and they believe that Luke and Vader first met on Bespin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where you can, like, push your glasses up on your nose and you know, fix your little pocket square and get your little calculator watch out. And, well, no, actually, they met on Rogue's Voss in issue 13 of Darth Vader. You know, it's... You're kind of, they kind of create two different realities here in these Star Wars books. Anyway, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about this. They just keep putting those two characters in the same place when Luke has no business at this point of his young career competing with Vader.
Right.
But anyway, we're halfway here. We're at part 3 of 6, and the issue starts with R2 defending Luke's prone, electrocuted body. And then here comes the murderous murderous astromech droid, BT-1, I think. And this is one thing that I just did not enjoy, is that he opens up and it's like a very cartoony moment where all the, where just a massive amount of guns and missiles and huge weaponry just unveil out of this little R2 unit.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, come on. What? Like, I thought that was too much.
Yeah. I mean, it's another example of when comics kind of, you know, you wouldn't see this in the films, for sure.
No. God, no. Like, there's just not enough place inside the R2 unit for all these weapons to emerge from. And I guess if I felt like it was supposed to be funny, then I would laugh. And I'd be like, ah, whatever, they're just making a funny little joke. Who cares? But I can't tell if this is supposed to be a joke or not.
I'm opening up to the page now. I think it's supposed to be funny because these characters, their history thus far has been kind of like the dark humor side of the Vader series. And plus, I mean, the page where it happens, it's all just droid talk. So I took it as it's supposed to be funny. In the moment, did I laugh? I don't remember, but
I mean, it is a pretty funny visual. I'll give it that. I mean, he's got this massive gun sticking out of the top of his dome, and then two, like a missile array on the side and another gun on the other side of his strut. And they're all pointed at R2, who just pulls, who's got his little electric torch out in response. And then, which is a funny panel, it's R2 turning tail and running off with a, you know, a patented R2 squeal.
Yeah.
So I guess it was intended to be a joke. I don't know. I guess maybe I need more time with that one. But what we get right after is Chewie arriving on the scene, and he rips off 000's arm and starts beating him with it, which I thought was great. We don't get to see Chewbacca tear enough arms off.
Yes.
And being a Chewbacca guy, this made me very happy. And also, Vader is now mobilizing personally against Vader, you know, despite people saying, you know, maybe Princess Leia, you should not do this, and she's willing to put everything on the line. And I thought there was some important characterization of Leia in this arc, where, you know, she's willing to, like, she's willing to die if it means apprehending or killing Vader himself.
Is it this? There's a line that I really liked. I think it's in the next one during their longer conversation. But I really did like their interaction in this arc.
Yeah, I mean, it has Princess Leia. Like, she's the one hunting Vader for a change. She had no fear in going after this guy. So now Luke has come to, and he slices off 000's other arm after Chewie ripped it off, and then stabs him through the chest. Now, you would think that would be enough to permanently put a protocol droid offline, but apparently not, because 000 will be back. And then right when R2 seems to be at the end of the line, there's nowhere left for him to go. He pulls the old trick from Revenge of the Sith where he splatters oil in the face of BT, who then goes nuts and starts launching all his weapons all over the place. And I guess you continue to get the picture that this is supposed to be the slapstick comedy routine of throughout this book.
Right. I mean, I think it comes off, the slapstick piece comes off a little better in comics than kind of the goofy R2 that we got in Revenge of the Sith. You know, I think it kind of translates a little, like the oil and that kind of stuff. I think it translates a little better in comics. But yeah, I think that's just kind of like as per personal taste, a reader, you know, they like that kind of humor in Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as I talk myself through it now, I think it makes a little more sense. But if at the time when I first read it, it felt uneven to me. Like, what am I, is this supposed to be like tension, or is this supposed to be funny? But then, you know what? Star Wars kind of bounces back from serious moments to humorous ones. So maybe the problem is all with me.
I mean, it can be jarring, you know, when you go from one element to another. And then in the comics, you know, it's very interchangeable. You know, one page, it's like Vader or Leia, and then you're back to this. And, it takes getting used to.
Yeah. And there's another funny moment where Han and Aphra are facing off at one another, and Han's got her lined up in the sight of a sniper rifle. And they're both kind of sneering at each other because, unbeknownst to each other, they're both standing under a nest of what they call wasp worms. And that would be a moment that I know would translate pretty well to screen as a humorous moment. But it worked pretty well here too. And of course, they each shoot at this nest, and they both get covered in these. Were they venomous, or were they just disgusting and creepy?
I don't think they were venomous. I think they were just gross. I'm looking. I don't see any references to venom or poison, but they look like they could be.
Yeah, and you know, if it wasn't enough that BT is armed to the teeth with all of these weapons, he also has the same jet thrusters that R2 had throughout the prequels. So, you know, this droid must weigh hundreds of pounds.
He's pretty he's the apple of droids. He's pretty decked out.
Oh, this guy's fully loaded. Anyway, so the issue ends, and the tables have turned on Leia. Vader has sort of hunted her a little bit and has cornered her by the end of the issue. And of course, we know that Leia's going to be just fine, as is Vader. But still, the last few panels are, there's a couple troops with Leia as they're hunting. Night's falling and it's still really dusty and hard to see. Two of the soldiers get choked out, Force style. And then, there's Vader standing with his lightsaber ignited. And he's right on top of Princess Leia. And it's what a cool way to end an issue. And, you got to wait another month.
Actually, I think what helped is since they shared Vader and Star Wars, I don't remember waiting a month between. I think it was like two a month Because you went.
Oh, you're right. It was probably staggered like once every couple weeks, right?
Right. So that was the benefit of having the spinoff like that, because it was one continuous story, and it really didn't make a difference whether it was Vader or Star Wars. It was just the same character, same story. They didn't like change perspective or anything. It was just straight through one thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we'll pick up the pace here. There's three issues left. Issue 4 of 6 in Darth Vader 14. It gave us a little drop of a mention of the Tarkin Initiative, the think tank that thought up weapons like, on the slow scale. On the low end of the scale, it gave us BT-1, but on the grand side of the scale, it gave us the Death Star. So I think it was Aphra that mentioned, you know, BT jokingly as part of the Tarkin Initiative, if I'm not mistaken. But I thought that was just a cool Easter egg to mention that. But here's Leia. She's trapped by Vader, and she's kind of trash-talking him, saying that he'll never win, that justice will always prevail. And she calls for the bombardment of her entire area. Like, she's ready. That's it. She's going to give up her life because she knows that she'll take Vader with her. But, you know, we know it's not going to go that way. That's part of the issue that these writers face, right? That there's only so much danger they can put these characters in, because you know very well that they're not going to die.
Exactly. So it really comes down to what's going on around them. You know, how can you build the tension? How can you create the tone? And you can tell that they kind of went for tone in Vader with a lot of these splashes and pages of just Vader being extremely ominous and foreboding.
Yeah, they really made him look menacing and intimidating in this throughout the entire book.
Right, so you kind of have to create the illusion that there are more stakes, you know, even though we know that these, you know, heroes make it to the end. You know, you kind of have to draw the reader in somehow.
Exactly. So Leia escapes Vader. He's distracted and she takes off. He seems to pay it no mind and just thinks that Leia's going to end up luring Luke to him anyway. But this is the part where Vader takes advantage. And was it at this point that he knocked some TIE or some Y-wing bombers out of the air, or was that earlier?
I think that was earlier.
That was earlier, I think. Anyway, so whatever, the bombs never fell. that's the point. The bombs never fell that Leia had called for. Instead, you know, the Falcon is on its way to save Leia, but it's rammed by Black Chrysanthemum's ship. And here we go. We're going to get a Wookiee-on-Wookiee brawl, something that we've never seen before. And we got to keep in mind that Chewie, our guy here, he's been poisoned. So he's slowed down in the fight. And still, it was still pretty neat to see an actual Wookiee-on-Wookiee fight. And then, Yeah. One of the worst characters, I think. Probably my least favorite character ever to come out of Star Wars.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't even want to mention his name.
Do you want me to say it?
Yeah, please.
You're talking about Commander Carbon, right?
Oh, that's who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The worst. Just so bad. So bad. So picture this, everybody. If you don't know who Commander Carbon is, imagine General Grievous's body with Admiral Akbar's head.
The stuff of dreams.
I mean, they really did kitbash the two most obscure characters, the two most unlikely characters they could find, and mash them together into this one misfit of a weird thing. It's sort of like the remnants of Palpatine's whatever program he had when he had a Grievous built. And this character is, he's part of Palpatine's machinations, right? To keep Vader on his toes or supplant Vader entirely. Like, Palpatine had no love for Vader. didn't really care if he lived or died, so long as he did what he was told. But Palpatine had these other... whatever you call a being, whatever you want to call him. He had a whole list of these people he could call on to hopefully take Vader's place, but Carbon was a bit of a chump. He had guts, though.
He tried.
He gave it his all. And in issue 14, part 5 of 6, he reveals that he's the one that set Vader up, and their duel begins. So Carbon, just like General Grievous, has detachable arms, and he's got 4 lightsabers, and they start going at it. The Wookiee brawl is continuing, and at this point, it's made clear to us that all of the Rebel troops have been killed in action. All of them. And I think Vader makes the point of saying that he's in to Carbon that he's endured, a thousand Rebel troops, something to that effect, and he's lived, and that really this Commander Carbon guy presents no challenge to him.
Yeah. Oh, just backtracking a little bit. I just realized this is the issue with the Princess Leia line that I love, but. I'll go back. We can get back to that.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no. It's like the first page of story, and I could just, reading it, I could imagine Carrie Fisher saying it with such conviction, and this is where I could see Leia becoming General Organa. Like this, I'll read the line. She's saying to Vader, no matter how many soldiers you march into battle, no matter what dark powers you muster, you'll never stop the rebellion. You and your beloved Emperor are doomed to fail just like your Death Star, and I'll be there to see it when you all go up in flames. I just, it's so, the anger, the artist again, Diodato, just the anger in her face and the conviction. It's just, it's so Carrie Fisher, and it's so Leia at the same time. I loved it.
Yeah, it was pure defiance. In the face of, at that point for her, certain death.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just giving it right back to Vader. No fear at all. And yeah, you're right. That was a General Organa moment. I think Leia comes out of this arc probably with the most accurate characterization, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least maybe the best growth.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think as far as character story goes, Leia really did have a nice character-driven arc throughout these, 6 issues.
Yeah, because when you look at Han and Luke, they were just kind of chasing their own tails half the time.
Right.
They didn't know which way was up or down.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I could imagine if Luke had the chance to stay at that temple a little longer, we might have gotten more, but it moved so quickly with him that, they didn't really get to, stretch that out a little more.
Yeah. I mean, so the issue, part 5 of 6 ends, and Han and Luke and Chewie, they're all toast. They've all been KO'd to a degree. But the issue ends with Leia up on a ridge behind Vader, and she's got a clean shot to kill him. As he continues to battle Commander Carbon. But then we kick off issue 6 of 6 in Darth Vader 15, and Leia stops herself from shooting Vader, and she's interrupted by, I guess, a force vision of Luke, Han, and Chewie dead. And she has sort of a flashback of Alderaan blowing up, and she decides she's going to take her focus off Vader for the moment and go help her friends. And in that moment, Vader finally gets rid of Carbon, who Aphra, looking to redeem herself, because she feels guilt for putting Vader in this whole situation to begin with, and leading him to Rogus Voss. She rams Carbon with her ship. And then, of course, he pulls himself out of the rubble, but he's broken and battered. There's nothing left for him to do, and Vader just dispatches him. So that, thank God, that we got rid of that calamari creep.
They do have a good moment right before he he does away with Carbon, where he goes, this isn't just revenge for the Death Star, is it? And then Vader's like, you'll never know, and kills him. And just kind of, digging that knife into Vader a little bit, getting at that emotional, he's going after his son arc,
Yeah, this is, it's a very personal thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it achieved anything, it achieved that, at least.
Exactly.
Could do away with the character design, but, is what it is.
We'll always have Commander Carbon punchlines to make in the future. Honestly, the worst character, I think, in my opinion, in all of Star Wars canon, he's the worst.
Ooh.
The worst.
Bold
So anyway,
claims.
Carbon landed on Vorogas Vos, and he came with his own Star Destroyer and an entire garrison of troops, and he had ordered them to kidnap Luke, take off with Luke, and they did get their hands on him. And so they're flying off in a shuttle with Luke in tow, and Vader uses the Force to cripple the shuttle. And of course, this is Luke's second crash in this arc, which he survives. And we race to the end here, where Aphra's kind of got everybody, like Han and Chewie. She's kind of got them pinned, and she could get rid of them all. And then Leia kind of sneaks up behind Aphra and KOs her right in the jaw. Just cold cocks her right in the face, knocks her out. And then they all take off in the Falcon, happily ever after. Or not so happily ever after, but the entire rebellion contingent there was murdered by Vader. But the end alludes. We watch Vader. It's sort of like a worm's eye shot of Vader looking up at the Falcon as it flies away with Luke. And why he didn't just cripple the Falcon as well with the Force, like he did 3 minutes earlier, I'll never know. But for me, it was a particularly cool moment because it kind of kicks off, or it speaks directly to what we see in the opening crawl for Empire Strikes Back, where it says that Vader is obsessed with finding Skywalker. And it just ties right into that, where now Vader is just not going to stop until he finds Luke. And I think that for me, that storyline is the best linkage to the main canon that we get out of this arc.
Right. I mean the storyline of Vader down?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just it's Vader's violent nature plus his obsessive rage.
You know how people are calling Rogue One episode 3.5 essentially? When I first read this, I think I was referring to this as like episode 4.5. Because really, I mean, just looking at the cover of issue 6 looks like a movie poster. It's set up so beautiful. It's like just a collage of the characters, but it just has like that epic movie feel to it.
Yep, it does.
Just on the cover alone, I would love to have this blown up as a poster, but. It really is a perfect arch, and it kind of makes you, this is on a broader scale, it kind of makes you wonder where they're taking the series as a whole, because they're spending so much time now, in this between 4 and 5 era. So this might be a conversation for another day, but when do they find Hoth, and when does that kind of kick off? But if we never got another comic after this per se, I think these are kind of great. It's a great transitional story.
Yeah, I think this arc is still sort of the linchpin of the entire, at least the entire first run of Vader, and the main Star Wars title. I think this is still the biggest and best arc that they've had. I don't know if I would say it's the most important. I guess. I hesitate to say that anything they've done is important to the canon overall. But if anything had to be considered that, it would be this arc. I think it really gives us the thrust heading into Empire Strikes Back. So what else stood out to you in these books? Any undercurrent or emotion that was pulled out of you?
I think we touched on most of the highlights that I would have gone through. You know, I Princess Leia's character arc, I think was probably my favorite out of the character arcs in this story. I love, that they're tying in the Jedi temples, just a tease, you know, there wasn't much of it here. It seems somewhat convenient that the rebel base or the fuel up, wherever, you know, whatever this was for them, just so happened to be on a planet with a temple on it. But
yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, but I like that, you know, it's deepening the lore, and kind of, you know, tying it all in. Dr. Aphra, I think, you know, like I said, this really was a time for her to shine. I think, you know, as evidence, as you said, you know, you really started to like her in this arc.
Yeah, I loved her. I loved her sense of humor, the way that she played off Han, I thought was, you know, they were both always sort of improvising. They're always flying by the seat of their pants, and you know, their plans kept blowing up in their face. And to watch those two characters scramble, and with their sense of humor, I thought it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say she's probably one of my favorite things to come out of the new comics, like the canon. I think she's a fantastic addition to the cast of characters, to the story.
Yeah, you know, I haven't read her ongoing yet, but I'm going to have to at some point. I mean, there's going to be something cool with that character at some point. I mean, and something cool and important at the same time.
Yeah, I finally started it. It's good. I'm not going to give much away. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I'm going to have no choice but to pick that up sooner or later.
And what about you?
Well, I got a kick out of, you know, I kind of did a tap dance on BT-1's massive arsenal, which I found a bit tacky, but in retrospect, now that we talk it out a little bit, it is a bit funnier than I'm giving it credit for. But Triple Zero's, just his enthusiasm for murder and torture, I thought that was, like, it's almost knee-slapping funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so inappropriate, the way he's giddy when he thinks that he's going to be allowed to kill or torture or maim people, drain their blood, or decapitate. He's just so thrilled. It's hilarious.
It's you know what it is? It's a level of dark humor that I don't know if we would get that in the movies.
No. God, no. At all. Not a chance.
So, you know, I kind of feel like it's something special just for us comic readers. I enjoy it.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, he's the total opposite of C-3PO. C-3PO is gold and shiny. This guy is just black. He's got the red eyes. He looks like this is something that Darth Vader would have built if he could build a droid.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's so inappropriate. And it's funny that the droids continue right through Rogue One to be the source of humor in Star Wars. R2 and 3PO were delivering a lot of it, you know, influenced by Laurel and Hardy, mm-hmm. comedians from way back when. BB-8 did it for us in The Force Awakens. K2SO, of course, in Rogue One. AP-5, probably delivering what I think is the funniest scene ever in Star Wars, with him drifting through space and he's almost burst into like a musical.
that was so bizarre, but I love bizarre, so I ate that up. I thought that was hysterical.
I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And now into these comics with BT and Triple Zero, and again, you can look over at the Aftermath series, and Mr. Bones is kind mm-hmm. of the same way. Some people love him, but some people really hate him. But I get a kick out of Mr. Bones. He's kind of the same as Triple Zero in that he loves to murder and kill in a very twisted, joyous way.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like the droids are the heart of Star Wars in that way. Like you say, yeah, they bring the humor, consistently, like you said, across, you know, that's the common theme, you know? So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And this Vader Down arc is available in trade paperback. I would, if you're somebody who's kind of feeling like you wanted to get into the comics, but you feel like you're too far behind, just get this one. Just get this arc. It's got everybody in it that needs to be in it, and they all have a bit to do, but this is just Vader on display. And you should have, even, I think any Star Wars fan should just have this, just to see Vader at his full power, doing things that we've never seen him do before, and may never see him do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's completely readable, even if you're not, you know, reading the ongoings. I think you could definitely just jump right into it.
Yeah, you can pick this book up. It starts clean and it ends clean. It starts on Vrogas Vass and ends with them leaving Vrogas Vass. You don't feel like you're being dropped, parachuted into the middle of a story where you've missed a lot of stuff before and after. It's a clean 6 issues. I would totally recommend this trade paperback to any Star Wars fans. And with that, we're done.
That's a wrap.
That is a wrap, man. Steve, tell the people on Twitter where they can find you.
I am at JoAngoFett, G-I-O-A-N-G-O, Fett.
Beautiful. And I am at Tumbling Saber. That will be it for Journals of the Willing. I forget which installment this is. Let's call it number 8, I believe. And you know, if you want to drop us a review on iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated. And otherwise, I'll just mention the Star Wars Commonwealth. That would be Talk Star Wars, Generation X-Wing, the Skyhoppers, the Rogue Squadron podcast, and the Nerd Room. Check those guys out. Go to StarWarsCommonwealth.com. Poke through. Have a look around. We're sure that you're going to find at least a few podcasts there that you will greatly enjoy. And more than that, connecting with some people that just love to geek out online and just have conversations about the stuff that we all love. So head on over there, check it out, and tell them Kyle sent you. Otherwise, we will catch you next week in episode 69 of the Tumbling Saber podcast. And for Steve, this is Kyle wishing you a good weekend, and bye for now.
You've been listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth podcast network. Learn more about the network and its members at StarWarsCommonwealth.com.